Christopher Owens, welcome to Lector Decoder. So great to have you here.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So the last time that you performed in Montreal was back in 2013, and I was there standing in the front row, and I got pretty emotional watching you play. You actually made me cry a little bit. And after that show, you came off the stage and gave me a hug. So first of all, I wanted to say thank you, a long overdue thank you to you. And second of all, I feel like that's really emblematic of how vulnerable and open you are as an artist. So I wanted to know how you managed to maintain that level of vulnerability.
I think like I've just always put a lot of importance on it, because it seems to be what makes the biggest connection between like myself and the fans. And then like you have to, I feel like you have to show real parts of yourself in order to get any kind of genuine gratitude back from anybody else. If it, I don't know, and then really the only way that I've known how to write at all is just kind of real life stuff. I don't know how to like pretend to be another character. Some people can write about just whatever, and I think that's great. Like I love that David Bowie song. It's like about the girl that goes to the movies all the time. Like I think that's great. I'd love to write something like that, but I just never do. For some reason, I just source from myself for
That's
better
awesome.
or worse.
I feel like that as a songwriter too. I do a little music and I always think of like Paul McCartney songs as those kind of songs, like little story songs, and I always think it'd be cool to write a song like that, but I never really do.
And then you listen to the opposites of, like on the Lennon solo records when he starts to really like open up about who he is and his voice changes. And my friend Matt Fishbeck, who I've joined his band early on before I started making my own music, he always said Paul McCartney's like milk, and John Lennon's like half and half.
That's a great way of putting it.
I guess in the sense of like, which one makes a better coffee creamer? I think the biggest thing I've seen was the pandemic. It made me stay home, or not home. I mean, we stay in San Francisco city limits in a car for like the whole time, because you're not going out to play. That was the biggest thing, but I guess, and you could say like, oh well, that's over now and whatever, but it kind of set a precedent like of what can happen. Like I never would have imagined, if you'd have told me before that that scenario was a possibility, I would have said no. Like, maybe like, sure, the quarantine like Chernobyl or the world has become more and more sort of seems more and more open to treachery.
So I'm sure you've heard this idiom before, but they say you spend your whole life working on your debut album and then a year on your second album, right? So
Yeah,
we've
I've
had
heard
a big gap for you between Chrissy Baby Forever and the new one.
that.
So is it kind of like a new debut? Did the songs come gradually? And like, how long have you been living with these songs? They feel like of the moment in a lot of ways, but.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that, because you don't want it to feel like a nostalgic release or something. And I don't know if you've got the physical vinyl at all, but I wrote like a long, long, I guess it was sort of, people write bios, an album bio, which I never knew about until I think Broken Dreams Club when they asked me to do it, and I was like, oh, what? And I took like my old boss's stationery and turned it upside down and wrote the bio on it, and I got like published, like people thought it was cool, like, oh yeah, no longer need this, which was kind of interesting. But then I never wanted to do it again, because that after that they were like writing another bio, and it seemed like I had to one up that bio, or I didn't know what to do. And then my friend Mavis Beck, the person that sort of taught me how it was supposed to go from the beginning, was like, you're not supposed to be writing your own bio. Like, you shouldn't have to do that. It's almost rude. Ask them, ask the people putting it out, like, why are you putting it out? You should write about what you like about it. But so I kind of had that attitude for a long time, and didn't you do a lot for your music, When somebody's like, can you now do this too? It's kind of like, okay. But you wish that like maybe somebody else had a fresh perspective or something, I was like, let's send the record to that guy that has his it's just a joke, but Corey Feldman, just send it to him and have him. I put out Chrissy Baby Forever, as you mentioned, but there's a record that gets forgotten about that shouldn't be, because it so I put out a record every year since album. Boom, 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 boom. And Chrissy Baby Forever. The next year I did put out something called the Curls EP. It was because I was starting a new band called Curls. And so it's got two like hits for an EP. It's a home run. It's like it's the, each side starts with an instrumental that is the same key as the song. So it just flows into the song, It's like an intro for each song. It's an A, B, one on each side. And it's fantastic. One, you might know the songs. One is like Emotion. Doo, 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 doo. That's what makes you beautiful. People liked it a lot.
Sure.
I wasn't my favorite one. My favorite one was the other side, Gentle and Kind, which is, to me was like maybe one of the best songs I've ever done. I still feel that way. It's like I'm so happy that I did that. Proud of it. I had all these contacts from, the six albums of work, and nobody was even replying to emails. It was really kind of crazy how disposable I felt. Really disposable. And this is coming from working really hard every year, touring the hell out of every album with a solid band every time. And each record is like, I'm proud of every record. I would have thought like people would have been like, yeah, I'll do something with you. But I was going nowhere. And simultaneously, my fiance of 7 years just decides she's over it and says, I need to move out, because we're living in her mom's building, And like, oh wow. And I'm like, okay, and now there's this crazy tech boom happening in San Francisco, and rents have quadrupled, and I'm out of my house. Nobody's writing back to me. And I just didn't, I was like, what the hell is going on? And I was like, maybe I'll get a job and just sort of reinvent myself again. But like, I like playing music, so I couldn't stop. Like, I kept playing all day long, wherever I was. I'd go in the BART stations and like the train stations and play, and just kept playing all the time. And the job I got didn't work out. I started working in a coffee shop in Haight-Ashbury because I thought that'd be cool. Like, tourists can come here, and there I am in a coffee shop. And it was like that. Like, people were stoked. But the guy working there was like, all you do is sit and hang out with the customers. Like, people are like, why don't you go stay with a relative? What are you doing just living in your car? It's not a good look for you. And I'm like, because I have a new band. I had found these great kids, you know, like really good band. Everybody that saw us got it, you know. It was a cracking live band. These guys were like 23, you know, so it was like starting over, and it was everything I'd wanted for a long, long time. You know, we had like an ethos, you know, everything was going to get split evenly amongst the four of us. We played 2 times a week, whether or not we had a show, just to play together, you know. It was going to be the band that I never sort of got to have in Girls. We recorded most of I Want to Run Barefoot Through Your Hair together. So this was like 2020 or 2021. 2020, I think it was. And then they all quit on me. And I thought, because I thought we were best buddies, but I didn't hang out with them in the same way because they were a different age, you know. And I had to find out that like they would leave and go hang out and talk about how worried they were about me because I lived in my car, and they just didn't get it. And I was like, I'm here for you guys. Like, please. I was like, if you take this away from me, you'll be taking everything from me. Like, and they didn't. They were like, don't think of it like that. Just can't do it right now, you know. And then, you know, for two of them, it was like, I just had a baby, you know, I don't want to be going on tour. I'm happy to keep recording, but it wasn't that band that I thought I finally had. So what I did was I came to New York. You know, this added more time. I had to move, and then I had to from then I had to take the record and get rid of certain songs that didn't feel right anymore, and redo certain songs. Like, This Is My Guitar was a full-on band. This is my guitar. I play it. And it was like, it should just be a guy with his guitar, you know? So I had certain realizations after a little time. And I think that maybe brought it, made it feel like immediate again. But it just took a long time because of those things. Like, people would write me tweets and comments online, like, get back to playing music. When are you going to make music again? And I was like, I'm every single day either out busking on the street or making the best record I've ever made. Like, I really felt that way. But really, the songs are old. It was ready essentially a long time ago. It sort of got reinvented. Who knows whether it was better before or now.
Well, I was gonna say, I love where you've landed on This Is My Guitar. That was
Thank
our play last week on the radio show.
Yeah.
I wrote some new ones, and it sort of fleshed out into a different thing that felt current. So, but I mean, so the idea is to start recording again this, you know, this spring. So
Okay, cool. Because that was going to be one of our
hopefully.
follow-up questions. We heard that new song last night. We were like, ooh, are we going to get some more Christopher Owens music?
There's a few things that I want to do. There's like new songs, like a new record that could be done. It's just like, here I am now in my current situation. Or there's a whole bunch of girl songs that are just sitting there that we never got to do. Like a lot of them. And I think it'd be fun to maybe do a sort of like the demos, my demos of them, and people would hear that. Maybe people would do like remixes, or I don't know. Funny how
Dance
we don't
remix. Do like
no, it's funny
like
how we don't do that really seriously in rock music. But like if a rapper did that, you know, it would get flipped a bunch of cool ways. And I don't know, you know, it'd be just interesting if people did it seriously. Like, you could, if somebody just put out tracks, you know, basic demo tracks, and then you had guys like just go full on production as a band, or covers. Why aren't people taking covers seriously? You know, like, have you ever heard that record, Nilsson Sings Newman?
Yeah, I have.
All about that. Like, that's badass. I'd like to do a record called Under the Covers, and the cover would be like me, like under the covers, like on the bed. But the covers, you know, being covers. cover
think it's fun
song.
when they do that. My mom loved Patti Smith, and 12 is one of her albums that's all covers, and I heard a lot of that growing up. I thought her interpretations of those were very cool.
I think it's a good thing to do. And especially when, I'm not going to try to start a new girls band. It's just, I'm never going to do that without JR. So they're just going to be sort of not fully realized. And when you have stuff like that, it's the perfect opportunity for other people to jump in and be like, let's see how we would realize it,
This is an interesting question. I don't know if I want to ask you this, but I'm going to see what happens. So, when I was revisiting your discography this week, your solo stuff specifically, I felt like I was noticing a thread of classical music influence, whether it's like the recurring theme on like Lisande or like, I'm going to forget the song names, but on When You Say I Love You and I Love You Like I Do, you've got like that Pachelbel's Canon kind of outro on one that leads into the other. And even last night at the show,
Songs that match into each other there.
yeah.
I
And then
love it.
last night at the show when you were doing, I think it was the second to last song you performed, it had like this beautiful finger style opening. It seemed to me like even your picking technique looked very classical to me, and I was just wondering if you listen to that kind of music, does that influence you?
I listen to it a little bit, and I love it, but like it's one of those daunting genres. Like, how do you fly on my own? Like I would need a sensei.
Yeah.
Feels like, but I don't know. There's classical music though that is essentially like any pop song. There's just, certain ones that you just know them right away. As, even as a kid, like there's like Hall of the Mountain King, dun, 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 where they're just so catchy and simple.
Yeah. I feel like in movies they're always doing that string one. I don't know who it does, but like da 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 la
Or you
da
have
da da
all
da da da. Whenever
the
someone's like walking dramatically.
Bach, a lot of most of Bach is like very, very pop. I mean, so I'm into it like that. Like I know those things. Like I have in my vinyl collection, which I'm still trying to get back. I still don't have from my last home. It's a crazy story, but I have a lot of classical records in there. But I don't know them super well. I don't read music. It's not like a thing. This what it is my first guitar was a nylon string. Like somebody gave it to my mom for my sisters and I to learn on it. Which I think is a really good way for people to learn. Keith Richards says this too in his book, like everybody should learn on a classical. And I don't know, there's a clip where like I'm doing like some, I'm showing my room on Spin magazine, like from back in the day,
Sure.
and girls promo stuff. And I was like, it's called In My Room, and like, everybody does one. And I was like, this is In My Room. And I was like, I'm gonna show them. And I'm like, oh, this is my first guitar. And I love, classical nylon string. And I was like, every girl song you've heard written on this guitar, which is true, because like I just would at home. I would play that, I wasn't like a big pedals and I like all that a lot more now, but at the time I really only knew classical playing on the classical guitar,
Sure.
and so like my whole approach was like that, like basically all the songs in demo form back then sounded a lot more class, and not classical but Baroque. I don't know what the word is.
Yeah.
Chamber music-ish, folk.
Okay.
I don't know. It's almost like it's like hippie music that sounds like that too, though. You know what I mean?
Like
It's
a
simple.
Renaissance kind of thing.
I don't want to say folky, but like yeah, like people's music. And then the Lisande. By the way, you pronounce that so good. Nobody else has ever done
Montreal.
that.
Yeah, we speak French
There you
here.
go. Yeah, I guess I hear the craziest.
Well, how do they say it?
I don't even want
I'm glad you like how I said it because I was like,
to
am I gonna sound pretentious like
do
saying Lisande?
it. No, it's perfect though. But that whole record was just there, I don't know if you've heard it. After like a year, we re-released it, just me and the
Yeah.
guitar.
I haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure you
Yeah, it's
have.
great. I love that.
That, when we did that tour, it was like a challenge for me. If I can sit here and play the full-on finger picking style that I want to and should and did in their studio and sing, I'll be so proud of myself. Because when girls would start playing, when girls would play, I would get so terrified of the crowd that my hands would shake and get really, so I could only strum. Why we always had like another guitar player. And even because a lot of times in the studio, I'd be playing all kinds of neat stuff. Just like I couldn't do it in front of people. I would get so terrified. And at least I could sing. But I just, the whole my whole goal on the song record was to play it as a whole, to perform it as a, perform it in order like that. Because it, it plays out as a story. I didn't want to chop it up and now we're going to do something from line. Play it in a row like that with the same people I recorded it with, and to be able to do it live, and when I did, and it was like a new lease on playing for me. I did a immediately we, I did a tour by myself where I just went around with just the classical guitar and played for hours. I do like hour long sets of 2 hour long sets of all the girls' songs, because I finally could do that.
So at the beginning of the new record, you do say no more love songs, of course, but tomorrow in Toronto for Valentine's Day, you're going to be doing a show. So you're going to play some love songs for Toronto.
I mean, I don't think I said no more love songs. I just sort of shrugged at the idea of writing another one. No, not another one, but I'm sh it's one of those things that I'm sure they'll keep coming. I don't know what it is about love songs, but they have to be written, it seems like. I'm not going to be the person that tries to make excuses for it, but everybody wants to do it, apparently. I think, I don't know, I think of songs as like people's like prayers in a way. A lot of people pray for love, whether they do it to a god or, you do it inside yourself, but people want what they want, and love's a big deal amongst people, it seems like. And I think people write about what they want, what they would really want, what they desperately need.
It's really beautifully put, Christopher. I want to thank you so much for being on our show. Can I call you Chrissy Baby still? It's Chrissy Baby forever, right?
That was a nickname from a San Francisco friend. It was ever an album, so totally fair. Fair game.
Perfect. Well, it's a great name, great album. It's been so nice talking to you. That was a great show last night. It was amazing to get to
I
see
hope
you.
so.
So thanks so much for coming to Montreal.
Yeah, come back soon. And if you could, next time, if you could play Love Is in the Ear of the Listener, I mean, that would be
Oh, sure, yeah.
my life's goal to see that one again.
You know what happens like to me every show, like after every show, is I'll think of which albums I didn't really address, and I'll be like, God, I could have I could have done all of these ones. I could have done eight of those. Done blah blah
You
blah.
gave us a great show.
First sort of commentary on pe when people like try to you could tell that obviously just try to tear down a song, try to tear down or like do a review to, they call it panning. It's so transparent. I was in a, I was like, my mind was blown that there would be agendas and things like that. I didn't know about that. The if the publication wants a certain look, you got to promote these bands and make these other pan these bands. I was like, oh, I thought they were just really like reviewing every record. Like, you get told to pan somebody by your boss like that. Can you imagine?
Horrible.
Something crazy. But so yeah, I sort of wrote that song in response to that kind of thing because it's because like I don't know. I feel like anybody writing songs is already doing that to themselves. You don't need somebody else doing it for you. And then like if people don't like it, they won't listen. So it just seems unnecessary. Rap music. I can recommend some rap music if people are interested in that stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But I feel like it's silly because all you got to do is you if you're into rap music, you'll find what you like. I don't
That's
know.
true.
Maybe I'll say like, give rap a chance.
You heard it here on Lecture Decoder. Christopher Owen says, give rap a chance.